Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad, your host for the weekend show. We're going to be switching up this weekend show just a little bit, because I wanted to replay a new segment that Chad and I are going to be recording every couple weeks. We're calling it the KER Market Quick Take. It's Chad and I weighing in on the markets. This week was the first one that we released on the back of the Beaver Creek Conference, really just providing our thoughts on the conference, a breakdown of our meetings and any opportunities we saw from the conference. So the first two segments, going to be the KER Market Quick Take. The back two segments, we're going to be circling back around to the markets for more of a broad comment and a recap of the moves this week, especially on the back of the Fed meeting. Without further ado, here is the KER Market Quick Take. Hey, everyone. Welcome to a KER Market Quick Take. I'm Corey Fleck.
And I am Chad Markwitz.
Something new that Chad and I are doing on the website, podcast, YouTube channel is we're going to be weighing in a little bit more on the market simply ourselves, sometimes giving a bit of a recap of some of our favorite interviews from a certain week or anything that's catching our eyes in the market. And really thought this week would be a good week to kick this off because Chad and I just got back from the Beaver Creek Conference. We went through a lot of meetings with individual companies, but tied in with that were a lot of the other, let's say, market commentators for the sector and people that are just active in especially the precious metals sector. But I think we all know how connected a lot of the metals opportunities and sectors are, especially when it comes down to the mid-tier and junior companies. So quick takeaway from the Beaver Creek Conference. It was busy. Probably one of the busiest ones I have been to. I've been going to that conference for, I believe, close to 7 years now. I noticed some new people, but even on top of that, I noticed a lot of people who were in the market, let's say 5 to 10, even 15 years ago, that are back. And a lot of these individuals, whether they worked for funds before or they were active investors before, I noticed a lot of them starting up their own funds and investment groups to get into these companies. And I heard a lot more of these companies saying they were meeting with more investors. The last few years going to this conference, I felt like all we heard about were the juniors saying they were meeting with corporates and other companies. That was a big change that I noticed this year, all of which being positive, all of which tying into very much this bull market theme. So, Chad, you were in a lot of different meetings. We shared a couple meetings. What was your takeaway just from the people you're talking to?
Yeah, very similar vibe. I think it was the most positive conference I've been to ever in the sense of the sentiment, but a lot of family offices, some European funds were there investing in North American companies, and it seemed like the balance of the meetings that the companies were taking were about one third strategics, like producers coming in and talking to juniors, either for strategic positions or possibly down the road takeovers. About one third were financial institutions and about one third were retail. But they said the retail they met with were high net worth, they were engaged, and they actually felt like they were seeing action happening right after the meetings, that there was engagement from the audience in their share price. So a pretty bullish week, but it was also a pretty bullish week for the metals last week too.
Yeah, it's a good point. Metals were going up and the stocks were going up. Just taking the quick flip side of that, the first day I was there, I actually put together a number of meetings with companies that haven't, in a sense, re-rated. Their stock price is very much stuck in a range over the last year, if not more than a year. Some of these companies saw their stock prices even close to 52-week lows. I was really hoping that I would find kind of a diamond in the rough, a stock that hasn't gone 2, 3, 4X in the last year or two. The problem is, a lot of the ones that I met with that were struggling, there was a reason for it. When I was asking about news flow, when I was asking about how they were even spending the cash many of them had just raised, I got a lot of the same answer of, well, we're taking it slow and steady. Next year, we think we're going to ramp up. We're really trying to end this year with a lot of cash in the bank and think about what we're going to do next year. I was shaking my head in some of these meetings, honestly, just saying, guys, now is the time to get out there and spend some money. We've all seen how much money has been raised, especially over summer, into these juniors. And a lot of these are juniors. Fact of the matter is, you guys need to be out there doing stuff. And there just wasn't that diamond in the rough necessarily that I've seen. We'll get into some other stocks that I think, or at least other ideas that are working and still have room to run. But the lagging stocks, man, oh man, it really stuck with me that they're lagging for a reason. And that reason is just simply lack of excitement in the play.
Yeah, 100%. I think the stocks not moving with these kind of metal price environment, with this sentiment, have a reason that's holding them back. Either there's some hair on the deal, or there's too much of a warrant overhang, or there's just not enough news. I think in most cases, they just don't have solid work plans. I kind of took meetings with companies, Corey, that were a little further up the food chain. So developers that had raised all that money over the last year, or some of the producers that were cranking out the revenues. And so for them, it was full steam ahead. They had the biggest work programs. They had a lot of excitement. They had a lot of news flow. So I do think the sector is bifurcating between the companies that are moving forward and the companies that are kind of sitting idle.
Yeah, absolutely. Now is the time to raise that money, spend that money, and do something with your project. On that development front, I find it such a wide net that people cast in terms of what a developer is. I really try to, if I'm looking at a developer, want that developer to be in production within, I think, maximum 2 years, and obviously sooner rather than later, considering where these metals prices are, so that these guys can pay back whatever money they've raised or they have borrowed to build these assets. What are you looking at when you see these development plays? What sort of time frame are you looking at? What sort of characteristics do you watch?
Yeah, I kind of want a 2 to 3 year window. But what's interesting is I had meetings with three companies that were jumping from the PEA straight to a feasibility. They weren't even going to do a PFS, a pre-feasibility study. So a lot of these companies are trying to fast track their development. And if they've got a 2 to 3 year window to at least get to a feasibility and then get into a construction decision where they've got a capital stack, I still put them in the developer category. I start looking at somebody as a developer around the PEA, but usually a PFS to an FS is where I want them, because I want a window to production. But some of these companies are trying to accelerate things or go into small scale production ahead of their feasibility study or do bulk samples. I talked to four companies doing bulk samples that are going to be bringing in income and doing trial mining. So it seemed like across the board, the companies that already had resources and economic studies were trying to fast track their projects.
Yeah. Oh, man, they are. That does also kind of scare me sometimes, though, because we've all seen how tough it is to build assets. I do like the strategy of this small scale production just to, in a way, test out the mine. But there does need to be that next step where these companies take a little bit more control and go a little bit bigger. What do you think, though, about this kind of PEA, sometimes even earlier stage than a PEA, moving into production and sometimes planning on spending not a huge amount of money, but a fairly large amount of money when you consider what their market cap is and what cash they have on their balance sheet? I know you like to trade these stocks. So is it a short-term trade? How do you know if it's a long-term trade after that?
Yeah, it's a great point, because we've seen our share of belly flops into the swimming pool from companies that tried to rush things or didn't even have a study and then run into problems when they start mining. So I am nervous, like you mentioned, but I also like the hustle. I mean, I also have waited for years to see companies get a sense of urgency. I guess for me, what I'm looking to see is that they hit their timelines and catalyst. And so if they're rushing to a feasibility study and skipping a couple steps, I want to wait for that study and then react accordingly. Some of them I will hold for the construction decision and the capital stack to where they start building it, but I often will sell before the first gold pour, strictly because it's not easy to build a mine and get it done on time and ramp up correctly. There are a few companies coming out of ramp up, though, that we even have on our show, and they're getting close to just announcing commercial production. In those cases, I'm going to hold through commercial production.
Yeah, those stories seem to be the most interesting. I'm with you on that, where when they have done a lot of that spending and a lot of the kind of boring work, finally getting to cash flow, that can totally change. But again, kind of market standpoint wise, a lot of what I heard, understandably so. Look, a lot of people, one, were very happy and felt very smart because, quite frankly, a lot of people have at least one, if not a handful of good investments they've made over the last 2 years that are way up. However, I keep hearing from all these people, it's early innings. I can't tell you how many times I heard that. And you and I have talked before off mic, especially even with some of our guests too, that, man, it rubs me the wrong way when I hear, oh, we're early innings here. And I was thinking about this when I was waiting for my flight. And all I did was just a quick search of the top of the tier companies. I looked at Newmont and I looked at Agnico. And just this year, the math that I did was Newmont is up over $40 billion in market cap. Agnico is up over $35 billion in market cap. That's crazy if you consider, yes, I know this sector is strong, but just two companies, arguably two of the leading companies, added $75 billion of market cap just this year. And that's not through expanding production. That is through generating more money. But to me, that does not show that we're in the early innings here. It does show undoubtedly that we're in a bear market, but I don't think anyone's arguing about that. It's just that early innings comment. I realize people are excited. They want to be promotional. I just don't think that we're in the early innings here.
Well, I think, as you know, this is a pet peeve of mine, too. I don't think so either, Corey. And when I look at it, the sector, I mean, I feel like we've been in a bull market in the metals for quite some time. But even in the mining stocks, and you have to differentiate between, I think, the juniors that are pre-revenue and revenue companies. Most of the revenue producers, the big gold miners, they bottomed in 2018 and have been running for the last 6 to 7 years, hardly in a new bull market. When you look at Dundee Precious Metals, Lundin Gold, Alamos, Agnico Eagle, Wesdome, I mean, some of the big names in the space, they bottomed in 2018 and they have been running and running. Some of them are up 10x to 15x. That's not the beginning of the cycle. Even the GDX and GDXJ and silver and a lot of the big components bottomed in an intermediate term back in 2022. We had that false breakdown in gold below 1675. Everything bottomed in the fall of 2022. And almost everything in the producer category and in the royalty category and in the ETFs that people follow has been running for 3 years. So hardly the early stage, but the juniors have really woken up over the last year or so. So I think for a lot of investors there, they were looking at it through the rose-colored glasses or the gold-colored glasses of their portfolio, and they felt like their portfolio of juniors was just getting started. But man, I mean, I think we've talked about this before. The juniors in silver, they really get going not at the beginning of the cycle, but you know, in the middle to the end of the cycle. So what do you think about silver and the juniors finally starting to run and what we know historically about how these cycles work?
Yeah, well, that's why I was so encouraged when we turned the calendar over to September. People got back to their desks and gold made a breakout. That's what I was worried about. Said it on the show a number of times, is that with gold moving sideways for 5 months and then the juniors and silver playing a huge amount of catch up, that had me a little bit concerned for some sort of at least a near-term top or slowdown in the market. But this recent gold breakout, as far as I'm concerned, that's what we need. Gold to consider to move higher, because that is the driving force behind the broad bull market. And it does give investors and even the commentators the argument that, okay, well, gold is still pulling higher. That means these other stocks still should move higher. Look, as much as I know people want to talk about what inning we're in, I think it's a silly game to play because nobody knows. But that's why I'm really doing a lot of research and asking a lot of people what a top looks like when it forms, because it doesn't just happen on one day. It takes time. So we all need to understand and probably appreciate that, yes, when our account that is focused on these stocks is at an all-time high, especially when you've been around for 15, 20 years, so you've seen that last major bull market that ended back in around 2011. So you know to at least clear out of some of your positions, if not a lot of them, to find other opportunities. But hey, it all ties into the fact that I didn't hear really anybody talking negative about the sector. There isn't a wall of worry, at least at that conference that I heard about. How about you?
Well, I mean, I would go as far as saying I didn't hear one bear. There was not a bear against gold, silver, or copper at the entire event. I didn't hear one person over cocktails or at a dinner or just in quiet conversation even mentioned that they were concerned. A few people said, hey, it does seem like we're hitting like the gas pedal here, but most people were going all in. So it does seem like a risk on, pedal to the metal bull market. But it does concern me when everybody at the conference is all on the same side of the boat. So from a sentiment standpoint, I think you can also look at the breadth. We've talked about the BPGDM, the gold miners bullish percentage index, and that's been maxed out. We saw that the last time back in 2020 and the time before that back in 2016. So from a sentiment and market breadth standpoint, and with everything above the 50-day moving average almost across the board, just from a technical sentiment and anecdotal standpoint, I'm a little worried that we do need to cool our jets here.
Yeah, one other thing that I kept hearing from investors and even the companies are warrants. Warrants are in the money. Look at how much more money from a company perspective we are going to pull in through the exercise of warrants. And from an investor perspective, look, even I'm sitting on a number of warrants that are in the money, which really brings up the question of warrant management strategy. Do you simply hold these warrants closer to the expiry date as kind of that leverage play? Do you exercise now? But then if you exercise, you probably want to sell some of that position. And then that brings up the question of what's another opportunity in that position? Warrants, I think, are still good for companies, especially when they're in the money, because they are a way to raise money from your current shareholders, or at least those that were current shareholders. But a lot of the companies now really can pay attention to who they're raising money with and make sure that it's simply not just warrant clippers. However, hey, any warrant clippers that have been essentially buying financings in the last year and then immediately selling the shares when they're free trading and holding the warrants, they're doing pretty well. But it really was one of the first times in well over a decade that I was hearing so many people, companies and investors, talk about warrants, how they're in the money, how they look so favorable right now.
Yeah, 100%. I had talked to a lot of investors that were actually exercising part of their position in their warrants so that they could have extra exposure to companies. Some were doing that and they were clipping it, selling the shares, and then rotating it into funds. I mean, into companies that they wanted to take positions in. But I actually heard more about this from the companies themselves that were boasting about how many shares were coming in early ahead of the expiration date, or if they had an expiration date, how much they thought was going to bring into the treasury. So a lot of the companies kind of rubbing their hands, seeing that there's extra money coming in now. But the fact that so many warrants are in the money, I think also speaks to where we're at in the cycle.
Yeah, even more of a reason for these companies to get out there and do something with that money that they have, that they've raised. Or even if the warrants are in the money, go contact those investors and say, hey, come on, give us that money. Let us do something with it. Really, just taking a step back, though, brings up the question of, where is this sector going? It's still a bull market, so I do think you still should have exposure to it, obviously. Some of these juniors just started running, and yes, I know a number of companies are 2-3x minimum, if not 6-7-8x higher. What's the next play? Where's the next sector to run? We have seen this plenty of times where gold and precious metals broadly lead a bull market. A lot of money is made. When they do slow down, even as they're running, we can see some other metal sector, because all the investors in this area do like to keep the money really within the kind of resource and metals narrative. What's coming next? I still heard a lot about uranium. Man, I heard a lot about copper too, how a lot of these copper juniors, which there were some of them at these conferences, even though it was more of a precious metals conference. A lot of people still positive about copper. I also find that there's just more copper companies, junior coppers out there. So sometimes that's why you hear people more excited. But I really do think that investors right now embrace the bull market in precious metals, but always be thinking what the next sector is, where money could rotate to. I don't have an easy answer for it right now, but what I was hearing a lot of was uranium and copper.
Yeah, same thing. And personally, I took one third of my meetings in copper companies because I'm actually personally looking to rotate some of my precious metals funds into copper. That's probably number one, was copper. And there was a lot of copper companies there that also had a precious metals component. So they're kind of a hybrid precious metals copper company. Those seem to get the most interest from investors. A lot of people rotating to energy, some discussion about how beat up oil and gas were, but also uranium as another energy component. So a lot of that. The other one that I heard a lot of, Corey, was the critical minerals. I mean, there are a number of tungsten companies, antimony companies, companies that are looking for rare earths, companies that have a mix of, you know, niche specialty metals, and they were really tying into the theme we've seen from governments, not just US, but Canada and Europe, about the importance of strategic metals, critical minerals. And so a lot of new juniors out there, they're also up 100 to 200%, but investors are just now finding out about it and piling in. So there seems to be a rotation either into energy or into critical minerals.
Yeah, we'll see if this continues, that critical minerals play a lot of them, at least with that antimony, trying to tie it into precious metals as well. But hey, I guess overall, look, one of the most upbeat conferences I have been to prior to, let's say, 2011, when I was going to conferences in Times Square in San Francisco. Things were happening. A lot of attention was being given to precious metals, even sitting on some of the shuttles around there of some of the people that weren't in the conference. They were even noting gold, how much better it had done. I did feel like people were talking about it that aren't even in the sector, but right now seems like a bull market. That conference only drove it home, and we were all seeing the different side of things where the stocks were continuing to do well in these meetings. There's a lot of money in the sector right now, whether it's new money or simply money that is looking to really rotate into the sector and throughout the sector. That's my takeaway. Shad, take us home.
Yeah, I think that we're definitely in a bull market. That's the key takeaway for me from this conference. I do think there's a lot of companies pressing the envelope with what they can do. They've raised the money. They're doing work programs. I do think we'll start seeing quality continue to separate from the rest of the mass, the people that make the discoveries, the people that hit their milestones on time, whether that's an economic study or a resource, or whether it's a quarterly production. I think that's going to be the theme. And still waiting to see the potential of some M&A from this conference. There was a lot of whispers, but so far not a lot of news. But I would mention that we did see a big mega merger in the base metal space and a couple of big acquisitions. Whether we'll see a lot more M&A, that remains to be seen.
All right, that wraps us up. The first ever KER Market Quick Take. Everyone, let us know what you thought of this segment. Also, let me know what you thought of the name. I'm not married to it, but we wanted to come up with some name just to brand these so that Chad and I are going to do them on a little bit more regular of a basis, especially now that I think there's a lot more to talk about in the metal sector, as we do have a full-on bull market and a lot of stocks doing well. That was Shad and Corey here for your KER Market Quick Take.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.